Finding understanding between Christians and Muslims, Muslims and Jews, Jews and Christians, well, it's never been simple. But today, the differences between the religions of the world feel like a keg of dynamite that could explode at any minute. It's a good time, then, to think about Abraham. Abraham is a central figure to Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. It's also the title of Bruce Feiler's book, The Story That Gives New Meaning to a Dusty Figure from the Scriptures. Feiler says one thing most people can agree on is the power of Abraham's story.
The most mesmerizing story of Abraham's life is his decision to nearly sacrifice his son to God. Each of us in our own traditions has a relationship with that story. But you would think in some way that that story was so barbaric, it would have died out over time. Instead, Jews read that story in their holiest week of the year, at Rosh Hashanah. Christians read that story, the same story, in their holiest week of the year, at Easter. And Muslims read that story, the same story, in their holiest week of the year, at the end of the pilgrimage. So here he is, not only just the father, but an active presence and an important element in every religious conversation today, 4,000 years after he would have lived. And I think you're right in saying that we're so focused on our own traditions to see his role across the world does come as something of a surprise.
Well, let's talk about that story for a moment, because while it is common to all three, it is also a source of dispute among the three. I noticed you very carefully said Abraham almost sacrificed his son without using the name of his son. In Jewish and Christian tradition, it is Isaac. But that's not necessarily true in Islam, is it?
Well, I think that here we begin to see what I think has become the great underlying story and becomes the heart of the story that I uncovered when I went looking for Abraham. And that is that in the original story itself, there is, I think, a clear message of unity. God chooses Abraham to be his partner. God blesses Abraham and blesses both of his sons, Ishmael, who is the firstborn son who comes from Hagar, the maid of Sarah, and Sarah's son, Isaac. Even after that moment when Sarah forces Abraham to kick Ishmael into the desert, which we should say here is tantamount to killing him, God continues to bless both of them. And then comes the moment where he's asked to sacrifice the second son. And Genesis 22 says, God says, take your son, your favored one, Isaac, whom you love, and take him up to the altar and offer him as a burnt offering. Okay, and that, as we all know, Abraham takes Isaac up there. The angel says, don't do it. And at the last moment, Isaac is saved. That story appears in Genesis 22 and then drops out of the Hebrew Bible. None of the prophets refer back to it. Disappears. It begins to reemerge about 1,500 years later, a couple hundred centuries before Christ is born, when Jews are beginning to feel oppressed, and they go back to that moment, but they're not looking at Abraham, they're looking at Isaac, and they're saying, look, just as he had to suffer, then we have to suffer. Along comes Christianity. And they go back to the story for a different reason. They see all these parallels with Jesus. Okay, so they say, well, look, Isaac carries his own wood just as Jesus carries his wood to the altar. The ram comes out of the bush in the same way that Jesus wears a crown of thorns. And so they say that, look, this story is a precursor of the story of God sacrificing his son, Jesus. And then Jews say, well, wait a minute, we're not going to take that sitting down, to use a modern phrase. They say, well, actually, Abraham took Isaac up there and he did kill him. And Isaac went away for 3 days, came back, and that's why the angel had to call out a second time. And I think this idea was so popular in the Middle Ages that Jews actually put ashes on their foreheads to commemorate the death of Isaac.
Now, is that same thing true? Is that same use of tradition and interpretation true in the story as it is told in Islamic tradition?
Even more so, because the Quran tells the story, retells the story, but does not name the son. Which is not surprising because it sort of alludes back to the Bible but doesn't retell them. So there was a big battle in Islamic interpretations. Which son was it? About half the Muslim interpreters said it was Isaac because that's what Genesis says. And the other half said, well, let's go back and look. It says, Abraham says, take your son, your favored one. Well, why does he have to say twice which son? And then he says Isaac. And then he says whom you love, as if Abraham, once he hears it's Isaac, isn't sure that what he feels toward Isaac is love. And so these Islamic interpreters, some of them, said, well, look, clearly it's Ishmael that God's referring to. And Jews and Christians, in an attempt to alter the text because they felt jealous of Ishmael, they inserted Isaac's name there. And so this camp said it was Ishmael. So you got an Ishmael camp and an Isaac camp. They were rivalrous for a couple hundred centuries, excuse me, for a couple hundred years. And then over time, as Islam grows more powerful and wants to distance itself from Judaism and Christianity, the Ishmael camp prevails. And again, there you see, I think, what is the basic element of the story, which is a tension between the message of the story and what the religions have interpreted and said that message is over time.
These are things that help define for us the moments at which the religions began to divide, but they don't look at what the problems are between the religions so much. It seems to me that it's later when scholars in each tradition began to look not just at ways in which they are unique, but in which others are wrong.
Well, I think, and that's one of the fascinating things about Abraham, is you can see in his life story each of the religions using him as a prod. I mean, early in Judaism, they say that Abraham is a universal figure because God in Genesis 12 says that he will bless those who bless Abraham, curse those who curse him, and all the families of the earth shall be blessed. But over time, as Jews begin to feel oppressed, they begin to say, well, wait a minute, we want to keep Abraham for ourselves. So suddenly Abraham becomes the reason for Passover, which came with Moses, who lived 1,000 years later. Abraham even starts keeping kosher, the rabbis say, even though the laws of kosher weren't invented until 2,000 years after. So Jews first, because Judaism came first, they feel somewhat insecure, and therefore they want Abraham not to be the universal figure, but to buttress their own faith. And then Christians do the same thing. And the early years of Christianity, Paul says Abraham is a universal figure. But over time, as Christians grow more powerful, they then want to distance themselves from Judaism, and they say, well, God didn't call Abraham to go forth in Genesis 12. Jesus called him to go forth. God didn't promise the land to descendants of Abraham, but to followers of Jesus. So they begin to turn him into a Christian, and then Muslims do the same thing. Muhammad, in the early years, says Abraham's a universal figure. He shouldn't just belong to Jews and Christians, but to Muslims as well. But over time, as Islam grows more powerful, again, they distance themselves from their cousins, as you suggested, and they say, well, Abraham prefers Ishmael to Isaac. He even calls the pilgrimage. He even, in Muslim tradition, builds the Kaaba, that big black stone that Muslims walk around in the middle of Mecca. So they then turn him into a Muslim, and that becomes really, I think, less an expression of Abraham than an expression of how the religions relate to one another.
As you've looked around in modern times, looking for the history of Abraham in each tradition, do you find in each a recognition of that reinterpretation of the past?
Well, that really is the key question. And I think that the answer to that question is that that is where the smart people on this topic are today. One morning I was in East Jerusalem and I trekked into this dark room with whitewashed walls, and about 10:45, a broad-shouldered man came in. His name was Sheikh Yusuf Abu Snaina. He's the Imam of Al-Aqsa. It's the third holiest mosque in Islam. He actually had this dark hair and this beard, and he actually reminded me, against my will, of Ayatollah Khomeini. But he was also nervous because he had never spoken to a Western reporter before. And we had exactly the same conversation that we're having today. And he started off very stiff and said Abraham loved God. He submitted himself to Allah. We should try to be like him. And over time, we talked about the pilgrimage, and then we approached the exact question you just asked me. And I asked it to him, and I said, look, given all the events in the world, how can I not feel despair? Or can the spirit of Abraham prevail? And he said, if Jews, Christians, and Muslims follow what's mentioned in the text, then we can reach unity. But we have two different texts, I said. But the message is the same, he said. And I said, well, you know, I'd like to believe that, but I live in New York. People are flying planes into buildings. How can I not feel sadness? You should feel sadness, he said, but still, hope must endure. And his eyes burned, and you could see he was a preacher. He was a leader. Abraham was a man of faith, he said. He invented monotheism. If we look beyond the details, which we disagree about, and focus on the principles of Abraham, truth, morality, and coexistence, then most of our problems will disappear. And he finished with his flourish and stood up, and we shook hands, and I considered embracing him, but stop short. He said we could focus on the message. It seemed like enough of an embrace.
Isn't it a little frightening, though, to have to go that far back in the tradition of any of these faiths to find a figure who can bring them together? I mean, how many thousands of years ago is it that Abraham is supposed to have lived?
He would have lived about 4,000 years ago. And actually, no, I'm not sure that I agree with that question, because I think that sometimes the best way to understand the present is by turning away from the present and turning back to the past. And when you go back to the story of Abraham, you realize that at the heart of it, it really is a family feud. Now, we know family feuds are bloodier and deadlier than other feuds, but we also know that we have a vocabulary in our own lives for having family conversations. And if you cast it in that light and you begin to build what we have in common, I think it helps us to deal with what we have that divides us. Because I don't think, the important thing is the goal here is not one religion. It's not some Esperanto mumbo jumbo where we all hold hands and dance kumbaya around the campfire. The destination is a place where we can respect the difference, and she has her religion and he has his religion and I have my religion, and we just mutually coexist. And I think going back and seeing how we got here, understanding that Abraham really provides the roadmap, I think begins to allow us to see Abraham as the roadmap for where we go from here.
Bruce Feiler is the author of Abraham, A Journey to the Heart of Three Faiths. He also created what he calls Abraham Salons, which are grassroots interfaith conversations that begin by studying Abraham.